ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour and happy Budget Day to you. On the program today, we head to the High Court to learn about an intriguing case involving an abattoir, a group of animal rights activists, and the Copyright Act. Who has the rights to footage captured by secret cameras?
It may mean that there is no incentive anymore for animal rights activists to go in and collect covert information because they can never publish it.
And before 1:30, I'll tell you about Jumbuck Pastoral's decision to sell three massive stations spanning 1.3 million hectares. If you want to buy a big chunk of Australia, an opportunity's just come up. We're broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. And g'day there if you've tuned in via our podcast. It is Budget Day in the Northern Territory. Treasurer Bill Yan says this year's budget will make life better for all Territorians.
Madam Speaker, this is a budget for everyday Territorians. At a time when household budgets are under pressure, this is a budget that sensibly funds a range of important services for Territorians that they rely on whilst living within our means and not adding to inflation and the cost of living pressures all Territorians now face. Put simply, Madam Speaker, it is a budget that makes your life better. Through disciplined financial decision making, this is a budget that delivers an operating surplus in our general government sector in 25-26, which means for the first time since 2022-2023, the Territory will not be borrowing money to pay wages. Yeah. Madam Speaker, for 8 years, Labor racked up deficits and debt to $9.02 billion. Shame. That's a 22% increase in net debt every single year. Madam Speaker, in just 18 months, we have turned the books. The economy and our collective future has turned around.
That's the Territory's Treasurer, Bill Yan. The 2026-27 budget is out today. What is in it for those below the Barama line? Our coverage on the Country Hour today includes Romy Carey from the NT Cattlemen's Association, who joins me in the studio. The Country Hour, Sam Parry, he's just come out of the budget lockup. He's been gorging on all the numbers today. And we've also got Louise Bilotto on the line from the NT Road Transport Association. So let's take a look at this budget. Sam Parry, fresh out of the lockup. How's it going? What are the headlines out of this budget?
Well, if you listen to the Treasurer, he said no sweets are in this budget. That was one of the first things that he told us when we came through the door for the media briefing this morning. For most government agencies, there's very little change. There was an expected record increase to the health budget and the law and order spends. So in the health department, the budget increases to $2.56 billion, which is up from $2.3 last year. And in law and order, a $1.7 billion investment in a range of initiatives for public order and safety, including $250 million to construct prisoner work camps in Katherine and Darwin and upgrade the Alice Springs prison. But I suppose some of the Treasurer's own highlights at his budget lockup briefing this morning were that there are slightly better than expected debt figures. The Territory still isn't rolling in money.
We're still broke?
We're still broke for now. There's an $11.3 billion net debt this financial year, which is $800 million less than was forecast in last year's budget. That's going to peak in the 2028-29 financial year at $13.2 billion before starting to decrease as we go over that hump towards the end of the decade. The Treasurer said the position has improved due to an increase in GST, additional taxes and royalties. One of those sources of own source revenue was actually the payroll tax, which he said was a nice surprise given they'd made some adjustments to that early in the CLP's term.
And Sam, what have you seen in the budget today for the primary industries of the Northern Territory?
Yeah, so the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries budget was $55.9 million. But they actually spent 67.6 this financial year. So this was as a result of one-off funding, external funding from the Commonwealth and other sources. This year, the department's budget is $60.3 million, which is a slight increase. An extra million to ag, just over a million to fisheries, and an additional $2 million to biosecurity and animal welfare. So that'll go into a range of the department's key performance indicators, which are mostly unchanged. So still aiming to do 25 significant research projects at the research farms, as per usual, and a range of biosecurity surveillance activities. There'll be an increase to some of those as well.
Romy Carey from the NT Cattlemen's Association, thanks for coming into the Country Hour studio on Budget Day. What are the highlights in this budget for you and your members?
Well, it's great to be here with you today, Matt. I think it's positive to see some additional investment in the biosecurity and ag space. It's an area of the budget that in the budgets preceding this has either taken a shave or not increased at all. So extremely positive and definitely worth acknowledging. There's still a lot of work to do in this space. And, you know, as the budget improves in the territory, as we hope it will, we hope to see that further increase. I think for us, the other area that we turn our minds to and is something that is a constant on this show is the state of our road network and the budget that we have seen for roads. It's been great to see that additional injection of flood response and flood recovery funding, and that will certainly go a long way to bringing our roads back to a drivable state. And, you know, for people living on properties, I was chatting with people yesterday who have only just got a second cut of a greater blade so that they can get avgas and diesel in, and that's something that they were not able to get, not because of supply, but because of the state of the road network. So for us, as we unpack what this budget really holds, it's about looking at what the new funding is for the Territory Road Network and what those revote works are. And I think importantly, when we talk about revote works, it's what's the time frame that they're being spent over. If we consider, you know, a decade ago, a really large road project getting funding over the 10-year duration, what is that dollar getting you today that it would have got you 10 years ago if we brought that spend forward and spent it in 3 or 5 years? A lot to unpack.
You've beautifully segued into our other guest who's joining us this afternoon via the telephone, Louise Bilotto from the NT Road Transport Association. The government says it is spending around $2 billion on roads, aerodromes and jetties. Here is the Treasurer talking about some of his highlights.
Madam Speaker, this includes $278 million for Tanami road sealing and upgrades, $240 million for highway upgrades and flood resilience, $201 million for the Central Arnhem Road, $133 million for the Outback Way, and $608 million for remote housing, land servicing and essential services right across the territory.
Yeah, they sound like really big numbers, but how much of that is actually new money? Louise Bilotto from the NT Road Transport Association, afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Matt and Romy and Sam. Thank you for having me on Budget Day again. Matt, appreciate the opportunity to talk. And yeah, my understanding is that obviously the numbers in the 26-27 budget are a lot smaller because we've been rolling out those projects that the Treasurer just announced for a very long time. So have been advised that it's probably approximately $30 million for the Tanami Road Corridor in the next budget and about $52 million on the National Highway Network, which is that's a good start for sure for the repairs that are desperately needed on the Victoria Highway and the Barkly Highway and the Stuart Highway, and another $30 million towards that $201 million on the Central Arnhem Road upgrade, and about $10 million only for the Outback Way. So, and we're not sure if that's continuation of the Plenty Highway side or Tukaruru end. Mm. And about $8 million to be spent on the Buntine in this coming year, which includes three rest areas. Again, any of those items are very welcome, but significantly smaller than those big numbers that, as I said, have been in budgets gone past as well. $7 million for the Carpentaria and about $8 million, which we've seen previously talked about many, many times on the Port Keats Road. And the point that Romy made was that we're getting a lot less bang for our buck now, unfortunately, just given the cost of everything to do with road construction, from labour costs to bitumen and fuel and, you know, remote access and airfares and everything that the FIFO workforce and others need in terms of training and development as well.
The Territory always wants more roads. Better roads, but this year in particular, after such a huge wet season, all of that flooding and such significant damage to our beef road network, the new capital works listing, is it enough? It seems small, Romy Carey.
Yeah, I don't think in a year like we've seen this year, you know, we could have got a list that would have met the need for our road network.
There was never going to be enough zeros.
There was. I said that last week. Yeah. You know, our road network is in such a state at the moment. It's extremely fragile. It's costing not just producers, but the whole Northern Territory at the checkout. We're seeing it drive up prices here in town. You know, we would have liked to have seen more in capital works, but I think importantly, we also need to have a pretty frank conversation with our federal government around, you know, the North is always pointed to as a strategic location for development, as the last frontier. Everybody wants to get on with the job of developing the North, and we need the investment that matches. And it's positive to see the Territory government come forward so quickly with that flood relief money, but we also need to see that willingness from the federal government.
Louise, if there'd been a bunch of extra zeros in the road budget, do we even have the capability of rolling it out quickly?
Oh, absolutely. The civil contractors will all tell you that they've been champing at the bit. So last financial year, there was a lot less rolled out. And in our request to the Northern Territory Government is to streamline that procurement process. I mean, they've got a very extensive procurement plan, and we need to see those tenders closing and being awarded as quickly as possible now. And you know, certainly our civil contractors are, you know, ready and willing to do the work, and have been for you know, all of last year, been underutilized. The most important thing I think also, Matt, is that we are focusing on the freight and the productivity roads in particular, because I mean, I'm all for doing a resheet on the McMillan's Road, a section of that. There's been plenty of works near the airport upgraded, and resheeting is very important to actually extend the life of bitumen. But right now, I mean, the Stuart Highway between Darwin and Katherine, as we know, is really high risk. So whilst we want to see as much, you know, activity on all our roads, we definitely need to see the highest priority going to the freight network, where the bulk of the productivity gains will be achieved for the territory economy.
Louise, just on the Tanami Road, because there's national interest in that road and talk of having it all tarred. This figure of around sort of 250 to 270 million for upgrades, it gets talked about in so many budgets of recent times. Is the money just not being spent? What's happening out there?
No, well, the Northern Territory can actually take its hat off, because it's done an exceptionally good job of rolling that out over the last probably 4 or 5 years. And we'd be very happy to see the next section rolled out for the new financial year. There was certainly a delay with the single lane to duplication this current financial year. And, you know, we're getting a lot closer to the granites. And, you know, whereas Western Australia has achieved 40 kilometres of bitumen from their end, so they're at a much, much slower point compared to the Northern Territory. That's been a good news story for us. And certainly I think Defence would want to see the Western Australian side hurried up compared to, you know, the money that they put out on the table in about, you know, 4 or 5 years ago as well.
If you're tuning in, this is the Country Hour. It's Budget Day in the Northern Territory, and I'm joined in the studio by Romy Carey from the NT Cattlemen's Association. The Country Hour, Sam Parry, is here. He's fresh out of the budget lockup, and Louise Bellato from the NT Road Transport Association joins us this afternoon as well. Romy, you've been taking a look at the budget, and there's some figures around bushfires that's caught your attention. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's certainly an area, Matt, that we would have liked to have seen more investment in from Bushfires NT's perspective. We know that every dollar spent on mitigation far outweighs the dollars spent during our wildfire management, and so it certainly outperforms our emergency response. And it's an area, we know we've had a big wet season, not only the impact that it's had on our roads, but it's done a tremendous job with growing all of our fodder and fuel loads right through our road corridors, on our pastoral properties and everywhere else. And the mitigation that's needed can't be understated. And so it was a bit disappointing to not see additional allocation given to bushfires to make sure that they're able to adequately manage that.
In what potentially is going to be a big,
absolutely,
threatening year.
Especially on the back of the review into the Barkly bushfires and the recommendations around that. So we'll continue to work with Bushfires NT to make sure that we're doing everything we can to support that capacity, but we certainly would have liked to have seen more funding there.
Sam, was fire mentioned this morning in the lockup?
Not explicitly mentioned, but just having a look at the outputs here, it seems that it only will increase between the 2025 financial year and 2026 financial year by less than, you know, $100,000. So that, when you have a look at what the actual output was for the 2025-26 year, including one-off payments from the Commonwealth, it will be set to decrease. There's also a bit of a drop as well of around $1 million in funding to the emergency services. So we're talking about NTES there, the volunteer service. 2025-26 budget was $7.3 million. The 26-27 budget will be $6 million. And the Treasury says that decrease is primarily due to revised funding timing. So the Commonwealth providing funding at a different time than expected, I suppose.
Now, text number 0487991057 got a message here from Ian saying, Matt, with the NT budget, is there any money in it set aside for the impending Barramundi Gillnet buyback? Very good question, Ian. I don't know about you, Sam Parry, but I went looking for this morning, and there is no mention of barramundi, no mention of gillnets, no mention of compensation in the budget whatsoever.
Not just yet. There's a bit of mention of compliance, fisheries compliance.
Well, yes. In the government, in its budget highlights for agriculture, its highlights are $2 million of additional funding for fisheries compliance unit and $1.25 million for the golden snapper recovery plan. And then it talks about the biosecurity funding that's coming the way of the cattle industry with that livestock biosecurity officers. So, well, there's funding for a fisheries compliance unit, but there's no talk of compensation for fish O's who are about to have the gill nets pulled out from them.
Might be one for estimates.
And one for the fisheries minister and Ag Minister Gerard Maley, who's due to come onto the Country Hour tomorrow. Louise Bellato on the line. Anything else from this budget stick out to you?
I wanted to really emphasise that the Under-Treasurer had said that the need for investment in roads has never been greater. And then he followed it up by saying there will be further costs for roads, but we don't know the full extent of the damages yet. So, again, they're acknowledging the, examination of the road network, and the extent of the damage that we've experienced isn't fully known by the Department of Logistics and Infrastructure. So it's really important that that not be just left to one side, that be acknowledged, but also then dealt with. And you know, as Romy had made the point earlier, if Canberra needs to be putting more money to the Northern Territory, we need to actually ensure that that goes into the right coffers. So 19 million was the windfall GST that the Northern Territory forgave for the of the GST for the 400 million that helped reduce the fuel costs for the current period, and that $19 million obviously could well have been spent on our road networks. So I think that's something that the Northern Territory does need to continue to make sure that we stay focused on and lobby the Commonwealth if we need to.
And the federal budget due out soon, is that where the real hope is for some serious money to go into our road network?
Well, if you're listening to the Defence Summit and you're listening to all of the opportunities for our mines and the gas projects to come online, I don't see how the Commonwealth can ignore that. And everything is connected by roads. We agree that the rail network has to be as reliable as possible for the Northern Territory minerals to be developed, but the road networks are the interconnector. And so the Commonwealth wants Northern Australia to go ahead. Defence wants to ensure that we are here to support them. Then you've got to spend on roads.
Thanks for your time this afternoon, Louise. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt.
That is Louise Bilardo from the NT Road Transport Association. And a big thanks to you, Romy Carey. I can't remember which budget it was, but a few years ago here at the Country Hour, we had a bit of a crack at the Treasurer because they didn't mention ag, farming, cattle, beef, none of that in the entire speech. To be fair, in Bill Yan's speech today, he mentioned agriculture once, didn't mention cattle, beef or farming. Are you feeling much love from the NT government at the moment?
Look, I think speech aside, the indicators are positive. There's positive signals. We would certainly like to see more of a discussion around that. Agriculture was one of the strongest growing areas for this budget when compared to the whole of territory. And so we're certainly doing the heavy lifting and pulling our weight, and we don't need people to tell us that. We know it. But like I said, the signals are positive, but the work's not over. There's plenty more to do.
Thanks for your time today. And maybe stick around. You might be interested in this next story about the High Court case getting underway today involving an abattoir. Thanks for your time, Romy.
Thanks, Matt.
It's time to grow interesting winter greens and tomatoes in the tropics in the new issue of Organic Gardener magazine. Plus practical tips on boosting your garden's biodiversity, available from newsagents and abcmagazines.com.au.
Yeah, in Australia's High Court today, there's a case underway to decide who owns footage illegally obtained in a Victorian abattoir. So the footage was captured on secret cameras by a group called Farm Transparency International. And this legal battle, it's now being watched very closely by human rights groups and journalists because it could have wide-ranging consequences for the laws around covert filming. Warwick Long's just had a chat to ABC's High Court reporter Elizabeth Byrne to discover what's at stake here.
Well, it's a case that started with animal rights activists collecting covert vision inside an abattoir in Victoria, the Game Meats Company of Australia. The company produces goat meat for export, and it's a halal abattoir. Now, the activists have been prevented from publishing that footage because there was an injunction imposed by a court almost immediately. It became known that they had it. And so they haven't been able to show anybody in the public yet. I think it was up briefly and then taken down. There was a story about it on a local TV station. And then there were several court actions, including the final one, where it was found that the copyright on the covert footage actually belongs to the abattoir, not the activists. So it's kind of like an injunction forever, that decision. So what's happening today is the activists are asking for that to be reversed, basically.
So this is almost an argument about copyright, really. Who owns the right to the footage that was shot on the premises of the abattoir, even if it was obtained by activists or not?
That's right. And it's very unusual. Like, it's that we have had a number of these cases come to the High Court. We've also seen a number of instances where animal rights activists have gathered material like this to show alleged acts of what they say are alleged acts of cruelty. It's rare for it to make it to the High Court. And when it has, the ABC, for instance, won a case in 2001 in kind of similar circumstances, but the arguments were a bit different. This time around, what's interesting about this case is that the lawyers for the abattoir have found a little mechanism that's used in other types of civil action, not ever for this type of thing, but they've tried to apply it to this. And the animal rights activists have said that the federal court that made the decision has acted sort of out of, you know, made a judgment on a moralistic basis, whereas the lawyers for the meat processors have said, well, that's not the case, and that, you know, they were doing the wrong thing, that the animal rights activists have actually admitted to trespass, and they weren't fined, but they were ordered to pay damages, because, of course, it's a civil court, and they're ordered to pay $130,000 in damages. So they're saying, you know, you were found to have done, you know, the wrong thing, absolutely, and that, you know, they're defending quite strongly this case about who should have the copyright.
Given this is in the High Court to decide the area of law around here, could the court's decision have far-reaching consequences for not only this type of action, but footage gained on private premises in general?
Yes, it could, I think. Certainly, there are a group of human rights lawyers and some lawyers representing a journalists group as well, who are hoping to be able to contribute to this case today. And that's the reason they're worried about copyright in general on covertly gathered material. And some of that might relate to whistleblowers, for instance, who are trying to expose corruption, or it might relate to journalists going about their work in one way or another. It might be that they've, you know, collected the material from some animal rights activists or other activists, or from someone like from a whistleblower. So they might, the media could be a third party, but at the same time they would be affected by this. So there is Peter Grester is going to, he leads that journalist organisation, he's going to be there watching on to see how the High Court deals with it. But in terms of this case as it relates to the meat processor, it may mean that there is no incentive anymore for animal rights activists to go in and collect covert information, because they can never publish it, because there'll be a law that prevents them, or there'll be a legal precedent at least that prevents them. And it's, you know, these are quite high stakes. Elsewhere in Australia, it has been a real problem for farmers and meat processors and other people who deal in this area that they have to worry about covert surveillance by groups that might not agree with the way they conduct their business.
And that decision could stem from all from this abattoir at Yarrabin in northeast Victoria, this tiny town near Myrtleford. Before we let you go, what's the timeline for this case as you understand it? When can we expect to hear more?
Well, there's a hearing today in Canberra that'll probably run for most of the day. And then it usually takes about 3 months for the High Court to deliver a result. So we'll be waiting a little while, but it is a very important question that has to be resolved. So I guess we'll know in about 3 months.
Warwick Long speaking there to the ABC's High Court reporter, Elizabeth Byrne. On the text line this afternoon, I got a message here that says, Matt, did you know that Elizabeth was married at Millangimby? No, I did not know that. And I only learnt today that Elizabeth started her reporting career with the ABC out of Katherine in 1987.
Hi, my name's Erin Hart. I'm originally from Wisconsin in the USA, and we're currently standing on the Oberon Project. It's a beautiful place to work in the Tanami Desert, gorgeous red soil, beautiful blue skies, and I'm the exploration manager for Newmont Tanami Operations, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
On the text line this afternoon, just received a beautiful picture from Yoff. Thanks for that, mate, he says. Stunning day in the Red Centre along the Fink track. Only 5 weeks to go until Fink, reports Yoff this afternoon, showing that classic red dirt and blue skies of the Red Centre. Just lovely. The weather's pretty nice at the moment. We'll get an update from the Bureau in 5 minutes' time. See you then.
G'day, my name is Floyd. Yeah, I work in the Spanish mackerel fishery and in the Gulf of Carpentaria. I love what I do and love my job, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. If you'd like to buy about 1.3 million hectares in Australia and opportunities just come up, I'll tell you more about Jumbuck Pastoral's big decision in just a moment. It's Budget Day in the Northern Territory. If you missed our coverage in the first half, you can catch it via the podcast this afternoon. Big thanks again to Romy Carey from the NT Cattlemen's Association and Louise Bilardo from the NT Road Transport Association, who were here on the Country Hour to run you through Budget 2026-27. The money in the budget for roads, not as much as people would have liked. I've got one text here that says, Core Lithium continues to pound the Cox Peninsula Road and have turned it into a pothole hell, reports someone here on 0487991057. Here at the Country Hour, we're actually hoping to speak to Core Lithium in the next week or so. So it's a question that we can put to the company, hey? And yes, if you happen to pick up the 2026-27 NT budget summary, you might see words to the effect that the government is spending around $2 billion on roads, aerodromes and jetties. And you might think, gee, that's heaps of money. I thought we were broke, but that's lots and lots of money. But as we've learned today, how much of that is actual new money and how much of that is revoted funds? It looks like there's not much new money in that figure at all. A little bit, but it's a small percentage. And just in case you're reaching for the dictionary, a revote is a budget term mostly used in government and infrastructure contexts, referring to approved unexpended budget funds from a previous financial year that are just reauthorised to be spent in the current or future financial years. We see a lot of that in this year's budget, but granted, we've seen lots of it in the past as well. Let's go to the Weather Bureau now. Rebecca Patrick's there this afternoon. How are you, Beck?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, Matt.
The southeasterly surge that's been moving through the territory. Where is it this afternoon?
Yeah, so it has pushed a little bit further north now, probably around the northern Barkly district, so around that Elliott area. Bit windy in Tennant Creek today. Currently, those winds sitting at about 30, gusting 35 kilometres per hour, although we did have a stronger gust of 50 kilometres per hour earlier this morning.
Gee.
That dry air starting to make its way northwards towards the top end as well.
So, is it still the case that when it does reach Darwin and the rural area, it's not so much going to affect temperatures, but certainly flush out that remaining humidity? Is that still the case?
Yeah, so we'll see that humidity dropping around the Katherine area tomorrow morning, but yep. Probably pushing further north in the evening. So, for Darwin, you'll feel a bit cooler on Thursday morning when you wake up, just with that reduced humidity. In terms of the temperatures, the absolute temperatures, maybe they'll come down a degree or so in some areas. Based at the top end, you'll see those minimum temperatures dropping. So looking at Catherine, for example, looking at those minimums getting down to about 17 on the forecast. Maybe they'll go lower at the end of the week. And the maximum temperatures may be so dropping from 34 to 31. But
That's Darwin, Catherine, hey? Catherine lows of 17.
So Darwin, we might drop a degree or maybe two by the weekend. But, yeah, not a huge change.
Got a picture from Yoff this afternoon, who's out on the Fink track. Blue skies. Plenty of grass. And he says it's just a stunning day. Is it set to be like that for the rest of the week?
Yeah, so basically sunny skies across the south, continuing through the weekend. Cool overnight temperatures. So Alice Springs dropped to 4.6 this morning, which was their coldest night since September last year. And so it'll probably be fairly similar tonight with those cooler temperatures. And maybe be on the lookout for frost if you're around those McDonnell Ranges areas over the coming days, with those temperatures possibly going even a little bit lower.
Ooh, first frost of the year, potentially, for the Northern Territory.
Yeah, so, yeah, forecasting around that maybe 1 degree mark around Saturday.
Okay, anything else we should be aware of?
Just generally windier conditions over the coming week, really. Getting those winds even picking up more than they are at the moment through those central districts around Friday, Saturday, and coastal waters as well, elevated over the coming days.
Okay, thanks for your time, Beck. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
It is 11 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. And well done to the Connections of Magic Defence, which took out yesterday's Alice Springs Cup. Here's the final moments of yesterday's big race.
It's rocketing down the outside late with Exalted Fire. It's Magic Defence getting tired. Leverage Buyouts flying with Itchy Bed. But Magic Defence, Seikos takes out the cup. Magic Defence will beat Leverage Buyout. Itchy Bed's run third. Exalted Fire.
Yeah, good win there by Magic Defence. And as mentioned, the winning jockey was Stan Seikos, who was pretty chuffed when he had a chat to Charles Geary straight after the race.
It's my second cup for the Kerry Patrick stable. I won it in 2025 on Venting, and I'm just thrilled to be given the chance to partner Magic Defence. And Kerry had three runners in there, so thrilled to get the job done for Kerry. All the connections of Magic Defence, and a big thank you to all the staff that put in all the hours looking after these beautiful animals. So thank you to all the crew, the staff and all the owners.
Tell us about the race itself. How are you feeling?
Look, we drew a nice gate, and the horse to beat was obviously Gary Clark's runner, Wolfburn. So from the good low draw, we were positive. It come across and we landed on its hammer, and we steadied nice. It was just a nice even run tempo, and it got to the 700 metre mark and it sort of looked a bit vulnerable, but I was probably left in front a bit soon, but just rated the mare along nice, and I knew she was rock hard fit, and we got the job done.
You've won here once before. What does it mean to be able to come back here and win again?
I've won everything here over the seven seasons, so it's great to come back here. It's a great atmosphere. Obviously, you can hear the music in the background. It's beautiful weather, and I'm just thrilled and very thankful that I can get these kind of opportunities. I had a minor injury there a couple of months ago, so I've done a big job, big effort to get back here and ride 54 today. So as long as the opportunity keeps arising, I'll obviously endeavour to keep heading to the carnivals. The next one will be obviously Darwin, and you know, we'll just keep following the carnivals.
Stan, congratulations, mate, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for your time, and thank you.
That is jockey Stan Saikos, who rode Magic Defence to victory in the Alice Springs Cup yesterday. He was speaking to Charles Geary, who also caught up with Kerry Petrick, the trainer of Magic Defence.
I've won the Alice Springs Cup with a mare that I bought as a maiden. So she came to us and she won her first four. I probably thought she was a sprinter initially, but as we've sort of stretched her over, we made the choice to go ahead and try her over the 2,000. I was actually doubtful, but I'm so glad I've done it now.
It was an incredible race this afternoon here at Pioneer Park. Tell us how you're feeling as we're going down the straight the first time around the bend. How are you feeling throughout the race?
This week, I've had quite a few problems with her, with her feet, and some ups and downs during this carnival, this preparation. And I've felt in the last probably 10 days that she's come ahead mentally incredible. So I wouldn't say I was confident, but I must say I thought she was in incredible, incredible well in herself and was seriously a chance. While I'm saying this, I must tell you that it was an incredible ride by Stan Saikos.
It's obviously been a very, very big weekend here, and you've had a lot of success at this course. Tell us, how's it feel now that you've got the 2026 Alice Springs Cup?
In all honesty, it's been a very long carnival, and I had 18 runners today, which is an extraordinary amount. I've got to tell you, I'm so relieved it's all over. and to honestly go out with the Alice Springs Cup under my belt, I'm so chuffed. It's not funny.
You've won, you've taken it all. What's on for the rest of this evening?
I've got a big oxtail stew in my slow cooker. I'm going to go home, have a glass of wine, have some stew, and wake up tomorrow in a whole new world.
Celebrating with oxtail stew. That's Kerry Petrick, and I like her style.
Itchy Bands run third. Exalted Fire just behind them in fourth spot. And then we had...
And congratulations to Elizabeth from Darwin River, who has taken out the Country Hours Alice Springs Cup sweepstake. So if you missed the show yesterday, you missed your chance to get amongst the action. Elizabeth taking home a limited edition ABC Rural stubby holder, an ABC Rural cap, and a commemorative ABC Rural tea towel. Oh, Elizabeth, I know producer Sam is getting in touch and we'll get those goodies to you ASAP. 16 past one on the Country Hour. Do you want to go and buy 1.3 million hectares of Australia? Got an opportunity coming your way next.
Why aren't journalists allowed to tell you everything they see in court cases? And are those with means gaming suppression orders? We asked the self-described queen of banning things, retired Supreme Court Judge Betty King. Search the Case of podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 20 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. We'll get the latest prices from the Roma sale yards in just a moment. But first, to some interesting property news. Jumbuck Pastoral is looking to sell three of its sheep stations in South Australia's north, which span nearly 1.3 million hectares. The three adjoining properties are Mabella, Bulgunya, and the famous Commonwealth Hill, which has never been offered to market. It's the latest divestment by the McLaughlin family, which is going through a succession planning process. Elders Real Estate Chief Executive Tom Russo says the scale of this sale is very rare.
Jumbuck have made a decision to put three stations that are located in the northwest sort of arid pastoral region of South Australia on the market. They're contiguous stations. But the good thing is they're being offered to the market as a whole or in parts. So the aggregation is made up of Commonwealth Hill, which is obviously a very famous station that's been within the family for three generations and has never been offered to the market before. That occupies about 550,000 hectares. Mobella, which is another 430,000 hectares, and Bulgunya, which is just over 300,000 hectares. So Pretty big chunk of land. All up, it's about 1,300,000 hectares, which, you know, I think is probably the largest contiguous sheep station holding that's probably ever been offered to the market.
So a significant offering, as you say. So it is, it can be purchased as individual stations, as a whole, or as parts as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Our intention is to use a very flexible expression of interest process to offer it to the market, so that lots of people can look at the different assets in different ways and put an offer in, and whether that's for the whole aggregation or whether that's for individual stations, those types of offers will all be accommodated.
Is this being offered as a walk-in, walk-out prospect for each of these properties? Does it come as a running operation, everything that's on the land, including the flock? Does it all comes together?
Absolutely. So everything you need, it's a turnkey opportunity. So, there's obviously good plant equipment out there, and a good vehicle fleet, even aircraft. And then what's really important, particularly given the tight market that we're sitting in at the moment, is that it comes with a really high-quality flock, just over sort of 50,000 animals out there at the moment, plus progeny to come. So it really is a going concern and a business that you can buy on a walk-in, walk-out basis.
Yeah, you talked about the size of these three properties together as individually. How rare is it for something like this to come up in South Australia, in that part of South Australia, of that size, and operations like this to go on the market? It's pretty rare.
I would say extremely rare. It's just it's a very illiquid market as it is. But then when you think about a holding of land of this scale, it's kind of unheard of. We've seen Rawlinna and Madura Plains transact in last year over on the Nullarbor. They're probably the closest you could think of in terms of a direct comparison to these holdings. So it happens very, very rarely. As I said, Commonwealth Hill has never sold. So this is truly a once-in-a-three-generation opportunity to acquire such an amazing asset of scale during a pretty exciting time when you think about the outlook for both sheep and wool at the moment.
Is my understanding this is part of a succession process as far as the entity behind Jumbuck Pastoral to offload these properties at this time?
Yep, and it's probably not something for me to comment on. It's really a family decision, but I would say that it is part of a very orderly family succession process where the different family members will be taking over different parts of the portfolio as the primary custodians of those moving forward. And the exciting thing for the market is, as part of that process, they've decided to allow the market to put expressions of interest in for these three stations.
Be interesting to see how much it all sells for in the end. That was Tom Russo from Elders speaking to Selena Green. It's time now on the Country Hour to head to the sale yards with all the latest prices out of Roma today. Here is David Friend.
Roma Asians penned 4,764 head, a reduction of 1,300 head from the previous sale. Cattle were drawn from the large supply district as well as New South Wales. All the regular buyers attending and active, a quality line penned, but the market solid with increases for the better lines. At the time of this interim report, yearling steers 200 to 280 kilos sold from 350 to 534, 2 cents a kilo. Yearling steers 280 to 330 kilos moved from 346 to 526 cents a kilo to restockers. Yearling steers 330 to 400 kilos topped to 498 to average 446 to restockers. Yearling steers 400 to 480 kilos selling from 426 to 442 cents a kilo to lot feeders. Growing steers over 600 kilos to 406 to processors. Bulls 450 to 600 kilos made from 350 to 372 to restockers. And bulls over 600 kilos to 414 to processors. This has been David Friend from the National Livestock Reporting Service at Roma.
Thank you for that, David. In the live export trade, there are two ships due out of Darwin Port over the next few days. So the live cattle trade going along fairly nicely in the north. There was a meeting in Jakarta last week between Indonesian cattle importers and Australian exporters. We had a chat to Mark Harvey-Sutton from ALIC on Friday, I think it was on Friday. We spoke to him about that meeting, and he told us that Indonesian feedlotters are still facing a government cap on how much they can sell cattle for. And the government's doing this to try and keep beef prices affordable in Indonesia. Mark told us that the cap has increased slightly, but it's still there.
Yeah, yes, they are. The cap has actually increased a bit now. I think it's sitting around 59,000 rupiah. It was 55 previously. That's an ongoing challenge. And I think it's always worth remembering why the Indonesian government puts policies like that into place. It's around affordability. They're trying to make sure that their food prices are affordable for their consumers. They want to make sure that their population has good nutrition and good access to protein. So we have to be very respectful of that. But there is no doubt that that does make the trading conditions for those importers very challenging.
Yeah. And for our audience, I'll try and explain this in that, say, if feeder steers have been sold out of Darwin in recent times for $4.30 a kilo, the cap over in Indo means the feedlots at the moment can't sell them for more than $4.70.
That's right.
That's tight.
It's very tight, Matt. And in some circumstances, I would say that a lot of feedlotters in Indonesia aren't making money out of that. So we just have to work with those conditions, Matt. And I suppose, to be a little bit quaint in my response, it's exactly the reason that we have these annual meetings with the importers. It's about having that opportunity to talk about the challenges that we each face in our respective countries, noting, of course, that the approach that we take in these meetings is that it's a single industry. You've got an Indonesian side, an Australian side, but at the end of the day, it's all one big industry. So that's the way we approach it, and that's why those discussions are important.
That is Mark Harvey Sutton from the Australian Livestock Exporters Council speaking to us about that exporter-importer meeting in Jakarta. On the text line this afternoon, Alex says, Matt, you observed plenty of grass in the photo that Yoff sent you from the Fink track. That's a concern, says Alex. If current dry weather conditions persist, and especially if frosts are on the way, this will rapidly worsen the danger of wildfires. Spectators of the Fink Desert Race love a big roaring campfire, but in light of the massive fuel load build-up across the country, this poses a huge risk. Keeping in mind that buffer grass is spreading further with each significant rainfall event, although I note the bomb currently predicts a slight but increasing chance of rain in the Alice in about a week's time, says Alex this afternoon. Now, that's it for today's Country Hour. Big thanks again to Romy Carey and Louise Bilotto, who joined us in the first half for our budget coverage. If you missed any of that, it'll be up on our podcast later on this afternoon. Keep it rural.